been a while since we've had a bourbon, I think, on the show. So I'm excited to sip on a little bit of bourbon this evening. It's his Brothers Bond straight bourbon whiskey, hand-selected batch. 4 grain, high rye, 40% ABV.
It's got rye in it?
Yes, a little bit of rye, yeah.
It doesn't have that rye whiskey
flavor.
In fact, I've had a couple sips. I had no idea it had rye in it, which usually, even a little bit of rye really, you know, takes the flavor in a rye direction. It's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, my initial thoughts were, this is classic bourbon flavor.
It has this, like, almost a baklava at the end flavor.
Baklava?
Yeah.
Wow.
How do you like that?
American baklava, obviously.
Everything is American now that we have an American Pope.
That's right. The whole world's American.
Spaghetti, that's us.
Yeah. Catholic Church, it's American now. Yeah. You're welcome. Just got more profitable.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, so hey, a lot of things have been happening this week. I feel like we've been kind of crossing paths. We'd be like, we'll see each other for half a second and be like, okay, dude.
Hey, bro.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? Good.
Gotta go.
I have this, this, and this. We got to talk about this at some point.
I don't have enough time. Don't bring that up right now.
Right. It's like, hey, I just want to remind you about this so that we can talk about it later.
I'm reminding you so that we can remember.
Right. One thing we're going to be having Dr. Kent Lesnowski on the podcast here pretty soon.
I'm really excited about that.
I'm really excited to have him on our podcast. He and I had a chance to talk.
You guys had a great conversation.
Fantastic conversation. He really pushed me, like, intellectually to think about things that I had not considered before, especially in regards to marriage and Lent and just how to live out the Lenten or penitential seasons as a married man. It was very good. I really enjoyed it. But you were gone. Anyway, and then he came to Tulsa for a conference, and you and I both were gone that weekend. And so I was like, hey, bro, I'm so sorry.
I wanted to go to that conference, too. It sounded awesome.
Yeah, me too. I was like, man, I'm so sorry. We're not going to be there. And he's like, well, what if I come back?
It's like, which was
very generous.
When he said that, I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, come on. So we're really excited about that.
If the tables were turned, I don't know if we're like, hey, well, what if I just fly back?
Right. But he was willing, and I'm very grateful. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Different seasons of life, you know.
Maybe so. And then Dave, you and I are going to be in Nashville this week.
Yeah, man.
We're going to be interviewing Father Mike Schmitz. We're going to be interviewing Michael Knowles, Matt Walsh, Harrison Butker, and a whole host of other people.
And then like several other maybes.
Right. So
maybe Candace Owen. We don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. So what we're going to do is we're going to post them first on our Patreon page. So if you are a patron, you'll get to hear these all first. In fact, before we go, I will post something on our Patreons to say, hey, what question would you ask of these of these guys? And so,
which, you know what? We haven't mentioned in a while. We have a Patreon page.
Yeah. Right.
So if you like the Catholic Man Show and we want to support the work that we do here, trying to spread the gospel in a manly way, then head on over to our Patreon page. We would love to have your support.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. So what have you been up to? What's been going on? How's the farm?
We planted 576 kernels of corn. Is that what you say? You like planted a kernel of corn?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. That's what I say.
Sure.
So we planted 576, 18 rows of 36. Is that right?
That doesn't seem like the math works there.
16 rows of 36. Okay. Yep. Okay. You know, if you get two...
576?
576, yep. If you get two ears of corn on each one, you're looking at like 1,152 ears of corn. It's a lot of corn.
That is.
That's a year's supply of corn right there. And a lot for the chickens. Really excited about that. It was hard work. We kind of did it the hard way. Lining up a string for every row, which I haven't done it this way. In the past, I have tilled my little food plot with a tiller to get the soil real soft, and I have like a seed planter that you push.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going in a directional change where I'm trying not to till the soil.
philosophical change, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Different approach to farming, trying to preserve that.
Back to Eden style.
Yes, sort of. So I did go back to Eden, and I honestly, so far, I'm regretting it.
Really?
Yes. So I watched the Back to Eden thing, had a subscription you guys have to the School of Traditional Skills. Highly recommend this. So my critique of this one thing I don't want to is certainly not reflected on the School of Traditional Skills. The Back to Eden thing, you put wood chips on top of your, basically everything.
Yes, wood chips are just the thing you do.
Just everything. And he addressed this in the video. He said, people say, oh, that'll suck up all the nitrogen out of your soil. And he's like, look how green all my plants are, blah, 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 blah. It does suck up all the nitrogen out of your soil. I have been growing food in this particular plot for a couple of years. And then I put the wood down and out of like, when I started to see, oh, well, actually there's evidence that says it will. I had my soil tested, zero nitrogen. It had, on the scale, came back as zero nitrogen.
Wow.
And things are not growing. So I'm going to have to, I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe.
Miracle-Gro, baby.
I'm going to have to amend the soil with nitrogen or something. Otherwise, I'm afraid just nothing will grow. But the Back to Eden, I think what happens is the wood absorbs the nitrogen, and then as the wood breaks down, it gives the nitrogen back. So I think 5 years in, you start to get this
circle of life.
Soil that's constantly feeding nitrogen back in as you have more and more wood chips on top that's breaking down and putting it back.
The thing is you're still at the Adam and Eve stage.
That's right.
And you need to be at the Abraham stage.
I'm year 6 months,
right?
And didn't know that was going to be something that happened. But anyway, we'll persevere in it. There's a solution. We'll find a solution. But anyway, because of all the wood chips, I can't use that hand planter. I'm not tilling the soil. So I was drawn straight lines. I had strung lines up across and had my daughter come by with a power drill and a half inch paddle drill bit. Mm-hmm. And just, and then one of my other girls dropping seeds in while I was doing the raking to get the, so it's like we were a really great team and it was really fun.
Nice.
To do, all of us were working very hard. And at the end of the day, it was like a really great family moment. And the other kids were involved too, with smaller tasks.
Sure.
But it was really fun.
Nice. I'm almost finished with my fence. Almost done with that. I have to still build my gate, 54-inch gate, which has been...
This is for your garden area.
For my garden area, yeah.
Keep rabbits out.
Keep rabbits out. We have a ton of rabbits. Oh, Luke did get his first rabbit last week, which is really great. We're going to be having rabbit legs here pretty quick, which will be fun. But yeah, so
I'm really interested to know how they are.
We're going to fry them. So they're going to be great.
Yeah, because they say you don't want to eat a spring rabbit.
Yeah, but you just fry, because they're...
I mean, imagine if you fry it, how bad could it really be?
Well, it's just because they haven't been eating a lot.
Right, they've been fasting for like months.
Right.
And
but yeah, we have a lot of rabbits out at our place right now. And so the fence is almost done. Lady Haley has been working very hard planting. I mean, we have a whole host of things, from tobacco to fruits to vegetables to potatoes to, I mean, just about everything that, mm-hmm. that we can possibly get our hands on. We're on up to 41 chickens now. So we have chickens going crazy everywhere.
Such a gateway drug.
I know. And yesterday I was working out on the fence and I was walking up and down the fence line and I turned around and one of my dadgum roosters was just bowing up to me, coming full speed at me, you know, about to...
Dude, I get psyched. Like, you
and
know
I'm
what?
Like, okay.
I haven't had a win in a while like this, you know? We're like physically conquering something, you know? Like, let's do this. You know what? The thing is, I'm ready.
Yes. And
I'm always ready to fight a chicken.
And I have my steel-toed shoes on.
Yeah.
So it was, it worked out. It was Adam 1... rooster zero, but that was a little difficult just from this aspect of, now I have to always be looking, I can't keep my head on a swivel because is he like running after me again? So yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Leo has been trying to convince me to buy him a gas powered motorcycle instead of a battery powered one. He's like, listen, Dad, we can sell mine. I'll give you all the money from selling it. And then we can go buy a gas powered one.
It won't even cost you anything.
It won't even cost you anything. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah.
They not share the one you have?
Well, the thing is, the gas powered one is not suitable for a 6-year old.
Come on, he'd be fine.
Yeah. I'm trying to avoid.
I mean, what
more hospital.
I mean, bills. What is it? Like, top speed's like, what, 50?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, and then Haley
he
and
can
I.
can handle it, bro.
Haley and I went to, we had a quick trip to Hawaii to celebrate, or not to Hawaii. To Mexico. To Mexico for our anniversary. We just celebrated our 13-year anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah.
Congratulations.
13 years. Seems that's like
pretty great.
Seems like that's a long time.
Well, you're going to be 39 pretty quick.
Well, the other day we were talking about Luke. You know, he's going to be 12. And I was like, yeah, in 10 years I could be a grandfather.
Yeah, dude.
And Haley was like, what? She thought it was scandalous. I'm like, hey, he'd be 22 years old.
He could be.
Yeah. I mean, my mom gave birth to me when she was 21.
Yeah. I mean,
that was pretty normal.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
So weird to be a grandpa. Like, 10 years.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Hear that in a minute. We got Jimbo Baggins. Jim, up in this piece.
Jim, what do you think about the whiskey?
It's just all right.
It's not
even on the yummy scale. Is that what you're saying? The look on your face.
A 3. Okay.
I mean, nothing gets a 3. This is a 3. Oh, man, that surprises me. I think it's delightful. Adam, can I tell you all the places we're going to go on our pilgrimage?
Sure. That'd be great.
Just listen.
I'd like a refresh.
Listen to this lineup.
Yeah.
Like you don't know already, but Jim's coming, by the way.
He committed.
For those of you who are panicked last week.
They told me I get to meet the Pope.
We yes. said maybe, Jim. We said maybe.
What? I didn't hear that.
But when we leave, we're going to Orvieto, Florence, Siena, Assisi, Cascia, San Giovanni, the Rotondo for the St. Michael's Grotto, Lanciano, and Rome.
Yeah, and we're going to do a Wednesday audience. We're going to hear a Wednesday
audience.
We're going
to be there for a papal audience on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So bring your baby.
Yes, because he will kiss it.
I mean, maybe.
Hopefully.
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know the Pope yet. No, but we don't really know him. He doesn't seem like he's not a baby kisser. Okay? Like Benedict wasn't really a baby kisser.
Really?
Not really. Okay. Obviously, John Paul II, huge baby kisser. I mean, let the children. He was all about the youth, you know.
Yeah.
Francis, baby kisser. I can attest personally because he kissed one of my babies.
Anecdotally, you know.
Yes. I can tell you firsthand. So we'll see. We'll see about this, Pope. But the only way we'll find out is if you bring your baby with us to Rome. I think I'm bringing our baby. I'm pretty sure. I'm like at least 51% sure we're bringing our baby.
I'm 100% sure I'm not bringing any of mine.
Yeah. But your youngest isn't a baby.
That's right. He's 2.
Mine is only 6 months old, so.
It'll be fine. I'm just joking, you shouldn't think like that.
Oh yeah, well, you know what we're going to do? Honestly, we're going to do whatever my wife wants to do.
That's a great
okay?
idea. Yeah.
But anyway.
Dude, if you had any superpower, what superpower would you want?
Oh my gosh, dude. Just like, you're just going to ask me this off the cuff?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think being telekinetic would be pretty sweet. I think that's off the cuff. You're just going to put it to me like that. That's what I'm going to pick. Telekinesis.
Telekinesis?
What about you? What's your superpower?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe probably like run as fast as I possibly
all right.
can.
You're
like,
going to...
Like run it.
You're going to pick super speed, really?
Yeah, maybe super speed. It'd be a lot of fun. I don't want any kind of superpower of like knowing what other people are thinking.
I definitely don't want to be able to read people's minds.
Or
no way.
I don't want to be invisible.
I would turn into a bad guy so fast.
Yeah.
If I could read everybody's minds.
Right.
Yeah. Although I will just tell you, I have pondered in depth the physics behind the Flash. And I will posit to you, it is my absolute opinion that the Flash's superpower is not super speed. I believe and am convinced his real power is slowing down time.
Mm.
Because he'll be going at like, you know, the speed of light, and then he'll just make this like right angle turn. No big deal.
Yeah.
Do you know the amount of energy he would have to exert upon the earth or upon some sort of thing to turn
right
at the speed of light? He would be like ripping like entire pieces of the earth, you know, when he turned, and it would be like a mountain just going flying off in the distance in order to make that. So it's my firm belief. This is a deeply held belief that the Flash, he's not fast. He can slow down time, which makes him look fast.
That's a good.
He's just running.
Hypothesis.
He's running at regular. He's just a regular
speed,
regular
guy.
Dude runner. But when he can slow down time, yeah, it makes him look like he's going super fast. And that's why when he does make those right angle turns, like nothing happens. He doesn't like rip the atmosphere apart.
This is why I like playing basketball against fourth graders. Because I basically look like an NBA player.
Yeah, dude. Speaking of which, the Thunder are going to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they're already in the playoffs.
Well,
to the finals.
They're going to the championship game. That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good distinction.
Yeah.
Thank you. So excited about that because
you're so excited you don't even know what you're talking about.
Look, yeah, I just in my excitement I got one of the words wrong. Words are hard. We know this.
Yes, we do know this.
Anyway, you brought up the NBA.
I didn't.
You said look like an NBA player.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was talking about more.
You said that
basketball and
you said the word
NBA.
So you brought it up.
Yeah, you're right.
So everybody pray for the Thunder.
Sweet. Okay, you want to talk about our topic this evening?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so I want to talk about prayer. I want to first talk
but
about...
But not just prayer in general.
Not prayer in general. I want to talk about prayer and temptation. It's an interesting topic. I think we've kind of talked about some of this before, but I'd like to take it maybe a different angle. Specifically, I was really reading through Matthew 26:41. Through Lent, and it just has kind of sat with me for a while, where, you know, Jesus in the agony of the garden, which I've talked to you about this before, that a lot of times in my mode of contemplation, you know, that my place of contemplation in my head, like in my imagination is in the agony of the garden. And so when I go to contemplate, that's kind of like the place that I go. And so I had been thinking about the agony of the garden a lot and thinking about the relationship of friendship with our Lord and some of his most trusted apostles, prayer, thy will be done, like, you know, this desire that the Lord had for his Father's will to be done, not his, that his, you know, let this cup pass, but thy will be done. Like, all the, there's so much there's so much happening in this moment, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just been really on my mind. And so I thought, what better way to external process this than on a podcast? And
let's do group therapy.
Let's do group therapy.
Except it's just me. And you guys,
and you guys have
listen.
To just listen to this. Yeah. So, you know, so Matthew 26:41, he says, Jesus says, watch and pray that you may not undergo the test. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I mean, I think that the second half that resonates with all of us so many times, just from an experiential standpoint, right? That we desire to do so many great things, that we desire to pray, to have a holy life, and then we just stumble immediately.
Right. In the morning, yeah, have all these great desires, and then...
Because no one wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to commit a mortal sin today.
Right. Or wakes up and says, I'm going to be weak today.
Right.
I'm going to experience weakness and failure.
Or I desire not to do God's will today.
Right.
No one thinks in that capacity, right? And how many of us have gone to confession in the morning mass, and then by the afternoon, we've committed a mortal sin.
That's why I always wait till the afternoon to go to confession. Always.
Just in case.
Yeah.
This is Catholic, yeah, Catholic
it's a hack.
Hack
it's
right
a,
there,
it's
yeah.
a hack.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, salvation hack.
But it's like, it's not that you didn't desire to live a holy life. You know, so something happened, right? Something transgressed in that moment.
Yeah.
And Peter was very interested in just laying down his life for our Lord. He made it very clear, like, Lord, I'm willing to die for you,
mm-hmm.
right? His spirit was willing, but his flesh was weak, right? And to the point where even in the agony of the garden, our Lord takes his disciples there. Then he takes three that he loves more and takes them further into the garden and then tells them to pause, stay here and pray. I'm going to go just right over here and pray by myself. And in that moment, those guys dropped the ball. It's not like they desired to.
More than once.
More than once, right? It's not like they were not, their desire wasn't to pray. So anyway, I want to talk about that. But before we do, I think let's give a little bit more kind of a context for what we're going to talk about. Because it's very clear throughout the Gospels, St. Paul, St. Mark, St. Luke, all talk about the importance of prayer, right? St. Paul says, St. Luke says, watch and pray. St. Mark says, watch and pray. St. Luke says, we must always be praying. St. Paul says, pray day and night, pray without ceasing. So there's no question here that this is not like mere counsel. This isn't like a suggestion
mm-hmm.
that as a Christian, we must pray.
Yeah, you know, the saints talk about this a lot. In fact, some of them will speak strongly that, you know, because prayer actually is a matter of justice, that, you know, the virtue of religion, we actually owe. So we're rendering what's due to God. So we actually have a certain amount of prayer every day that
is owed
to God. And there's, you know, there's somewhat, I would say, different opinions on how much time. You know, it goes, you know, we're not talking about just piety, we're not talking about devotions, but just does a person owe daily to God? And obviously it's going to depend on your circumstances, but my own interpretation of listening to different people is that it's about 15 minutes. That's my interpretation of different people, that's what we owe to God is about, at least, we're talking about a minimum here.
Yeah.
Of 15 minutes.
Yeah, so when we get back on the other side of the break, I want to start with this little poem from a guy named James Montgomery. It's just four sentences that kind of resonate well and kind of talk about how the importance of prayer here. And then we'll go into time for prayer, morning prayer, and then prayer and temptation.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're talking about prayer. I thought this little poem, a little stanza, I guess, was really beautiful. And just wanted to share it with you guys. So it says, Prayer is the Christian's vital breath, the Christian's native air, the watchword of the gates of death. He enters heaven by prayer. And this guy, that's by James Montgomery, I guess. And he wrote many hymns and things like that. But it just goes to show a lot of how what even Padre Pio talked about, how, you know, prayer is the oxygen for the soul, right? That
right.
that you can't actually, that prayer is so grave of a matter ordered towards the love of God and the relationship that we have with him, that it should be taken seriously to the point where we're realizing that that is the gateway into heaven, the key to unlock the pearly gates, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. If you just think about that parable that Jesus tells about the bridegroom who comes in the middle of the night, and then the people have to go, the virgins with the oil and without the oil, and they have to come. And then finally they come back, you know, and he says, I do not know thee.
Right.
You know, it's like, that is kind of going to be what's required to get into heaven, right? Mm-hmm. Is there's got to be a relationship there.
Mm-hmm. And prayer, interestingly, is like...
Generally speaking, you know, I'm not
right.
passing any judgment on people.
But. Sure. But prayer is so... The Lord has set it up to where I find it very fascinating. There's only certain things that... So there's only certain virtues you can exert or exercise, I guess is a better way of saying it, if you are rich. Right, the virtue of magnificence can only be utilized if you have wealth.
Right,
magnanimity can only really be utilized in certain aspects or certain situations in your life.
Yeah, without leisure, magnanimity becomes your opportunity for it is smaller.
But the virtue of prayer is ordered to every person, whether you are. Rich or poor, young or old, regardless of your status, regardless of where you are in life, the virtue of prayer is the Lord has seen it fit to give wherever you are in life the opportunity to pray, to enter into a relationship with him, which I think is so beautiful. This is like the mercy that he has. He says, it's not just for the elite. It's not just for you know, kingship.
Or just for the priests. Right, or the monks.
It's for everybody, regardless of your age, regardless of your status in life, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very, if you go through and you read some of the saints, what they talk about, here's St. John Chrysostom in talking about prayer. He says, "We who retire to rest at night and know not whether we shall live to rise in the morning, who rise in the morning being uncertain whether we shall retire to rest when the night comes, who are uncertain of our salvation and perhaps heavenly laden with sins, nevertheless care so little about praying as to forget or to neglect prayer altogether, just as if we were self-sufficient and able to get along without God." So it basically he's just saying, like, it doesn't matter if you are in the middle, you know, resting your head at night. You can't expect to be up in the morning. If you're up in the morning, can't expect to actually get a chance to even rest at night. That it doesn't matter where you are in your state in life, that you should be focused on offering that time up in prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, if you want to be happy in life, I mean, even if you want to just think about yourself for a second, if you just want to be happy,
myself,
yeah, or whoever, then living God's will is the path to the greatest happiness in this life, not just in the next, but even in this life. If you live his will for your life, you will be happier than any other alternative life that you could have lived. The only way that you will know God's will for your life is by spending time with him and getting and being accustomed to hearing his voice, because he speaks in ways that you might not hear, right? He's yeah, not
silence is his language.
Right. He's not pushy. Sometimes sometimes he can be, but in those day to day moments where he's trying to guide you,
mm-hmm.
he's very quiet. And so, unless you're able to hear that, then you're just going to live a life that's more unhappy.
Yeah, because you're not. Yeah, you're not living the life that in which you're called to live.
Mm-hmm.
Your end.
But ultimately, the reason why we should be praying is out of love for him.
That's right.
Right. So you might start off developing a prayer life, oh, just because I have to, or because, yeah, I do want to be happy. You know, I get that the Christian life leads to greater happiness, but you need to ultimately orient your soul towards, I pray because I want to be with him.
Because mm-hmm. I desire a relationship with him.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So St. Alphonsus Liguori, which, by the way, I have books of like all of his writings. I have his whole deal that I have for you, but I keep forgetting to bring it over.
So dude, you need to remember.
I know. I apologize. But so St. Alphonsus Liguori, doctor of the church, in moral theology.
Tough guy.
But we need
so,
him.
So solid. Great. Oh my gosh.
So here's what he talks about when prayer, like neglecting prayer and just the importance of prayer. He says, he through a willful neglect does not pray for one whole day is guilty of venial sin. But in case of temptation, it might be a mortal sin to neglect prayer for less time than a day. I probably mistyped that, but basically, like if you don't pray in a day, depending on
like if
on,
you're
in a case of
experiencing a lot of temptation,
right? And he who neglects all prayer for a whole month or for 2 months commits a grievous sin by neglecting to give God the honor we owe him through acts of faith, hope, and love. So, you know, say Alphonsus Liguori makes it very clear here, like, if you go all day without praying, that could be a venial sin.
Yeah, I thought that I saw this in your notes, and it was, I found this to be curious, that you willfully...
Neglect.
He says willfully. It's not right. Just like, oh, you forget to pray. Sometimes it happens, right?
Right.
You willfully neglect to pray for a day, venial sin. But if you don't pray in a period of temptation, that might be a mortal sin.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting to me because those periods of mortal sin, sometimes, you know, they come upon you. And, you know, it's not like you choose when those moments happen, right? I mean...
Well, I think a lot of times you do.
Well, okay, you actually do
I
have...
I mean, actually, you have to in order for it to be considered a mortal sin.
Well, no, I'm talking about experiencing the temptation.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You know, like, yeah. It's not like you signed up or, like...
Sure.
Sometimes you can see temptation and you can foresee it, right? You know, like, oh, I'm going to be doing whatever, you know.
And all these boxes are checked, and from my experiential knowledge,
I'm going to the gym, you know.
When all of these things are... All these things are aligned. My fault shows.
Right. I need to make sure I have, you know, custody of the eyes, whatever. But generally speaking, it kind of shows up and you're not always ready for it. So I thought this is just interesting that him saying, yes, when you have absolute control, you could have prayed and you just didn't and you just chose not to. That's a venial sin. But not praying in those moments of temptation. He doesn't say it is, but then
it might be a mortal sin.
It might be
to neglect prayer.
But he certainly seems to say, to imply that that is a more serious time that for not having prayed. I thought that was interesting.
I mean, that makes sense though from a natural perspective, right? That if your son is in dire need and he doesn't call for your help, that could be fatal for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if he doesn't call for your name throughout the whole day for whatever reason, it's like, okay, that's not a good relationship. But if you're in dire need of me and you don't call me, knowing that I can help you, that's a grave matter.
Right. Yeah. It's...
I mean, if my son was didn't know how to swim and he fell into the pond, he was drowning, and I was right there and he wasn't calling my name.
Yeah. Then this is why it's so important to have the habit of prayer, that you would do this out of instinct.
Yeah.
Right, that you would habitually, because otherwise sometimes those moments of temptation come and in the moment, that whatever it is you're being tempted with, the apple on the tree looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You don't want it. you know, you don't want to call out to God, you know, because all of a sudden the goods that are before you seem like the, you know, you know, it's a temptation. If it wasn't enticing, it wouldn't be a temptation.
Because your passions can blind you so quick.
Right. And so without the habit, without this reflex, you know, where I'm not having to think about what to do. I just kind of have this muscle memory response of reaching out in prayer.
Which is so interesting telling why the spiritual life happens so slowly in growth. Because you can go day after day after day and be like, I don't feel anything holier. Like, I don't feel like anything has changed in my life. And then that one moment happens where you would, you know, you may have gone off the beaten path, but you instinctively went back into prayer and you avoided that. And you may not have realized or recognized, like, oh, it's because I've been habitually praying and orienting myself towards prayer throughout the day that caused me not to do that thing.
This is what we mean when we say, when St. Thomas says that grace perfects nature, grace, sometimes people say grace builds on nature, but it perfects nature. But first of all, you have to establish these natural things.
Right.
So that they can be infused with grace.
It's very cool.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking a little bit of Brothers Bond straight bourbon whiskey, which I'm really enjoying. A good dram. We're talking about prayer, especially in moments of temptation, which before the break we were talking about kind of the conundrum of experiencing moments of temptation. And all of a sudden, like, that's not when you... like, just feel like, oh, man, let me pray right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you do. I think, you know, one, if you have the habit,
I think you can
be in those in the moments where it's like, Lord, save me.
Right.
You know?
And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about those type of moments in which we have to, where you should turn into that. Mm-hmm. I do want to ask you this question, though. So there's, and get your thoughts on this. So I was going to talk about, like, the importance of habit of prayer and then how that bleeds into the family and the importance of family prayer, because then, you know, the habits that you have in the morning and the night, and especially during the meals, before and after meals, habituates your family into prayer so that it creates this habit of prayer like we've been talking about, which is growth in the spiritual life. So I was going to talk about, kind of unpack that a little bit. I'm going to pass on that and get into the topic, but I do want to ask you this, your thoughts on this, because this is from Father Clement Kroc. He's a Scottish priest. He had a book called Discourses on Virtue and Vice. It's a fantastic book. It's out of print, but somebody should reprint it. But
Koryesu, come on.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, exactly. But the way he said this just kind of struck me, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts. He said, "The union of family prayers offers a holy violence to heaven, and where practiced, infallibly draws down God's special blessing upon that home and that family."
A holy violence to
heaven.
To heaven?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
I'm assuming it means, like, you know, you're calling upon, like, a whole, like, just aggressive thunderstorm of...
So it's like from heaven.
No, to heaven, like, of need, desire, wants, you know, like...
But we're not doing violence to heaven.
It's the act itself,
uh-huh,
of prayer, like, the exertion of the prayer just violently towards heaven. Yeah. I don't know, that's what he said. It struck me. It's at the top of that page right there. Yeah. Offers a holy violence to heaven, and where practiced, infallibly draws down God's special blessing.
I mean,
upon
that, I believe that
that is
true.
Family.
That, you know, when you call upon the Lord, he will never.
I don't know exactly what holy violence to it. Like, I'm not sure exactly.
That's the phrase that was confusing.
Well, that's
me.
Why it caught me. Yeah.
Yeah, because the rest of it, you know, when practiced, infallibly draws down God's special blessings upon the family and the home and that family. Yeah, that Seems pretty straightforward.
That all checks.
I mean, the holy violence to heaven. That's an interesting phrase. I'm not familiar with that phrase. It sounds cool.
Right, but I just don't know exactly.
But yes, that's the thing is that when you pray, God, he doesn't wait. He instantly comes to your aid. Now, you might not, that aid is going to be a tailor-made mercy for you in that moment. Okay, and just like a parent who sees that, you know, like coming to the aid of their children, that the maybe the best thing for them isn't just to do it for them. I'm not just going to fix this for you. Okay, right. Because what you really need to do is see, it's easy for me to see that, well, all you need to do is
X.
Is persevere for yourself. You know, you're looking to me just to solve this because all of a sudden, because you're a little child.
Right.
And, you know, your parents have solved everything for you. But, you know, I recognize now you're at this moment where you need to learn that actually you can solve this for yourself. Not that God is looking for us to solve and to save ourselves from temptation. That's not it, but it's just an analogy, right? So sometimes that's what that mercy is. It's not, he's not just going to come and swoop in and all of a sudden temptation is instantly gone. Because he does want us to grow. He wants us to become stronger, where this temptation becomes less of a thing.
Right.
Right?
Which is why he didn't remove the thorn of Paul's side.
Yeah, possibly. I mean,
he said, very possibly. My grace is sufficient for you.
That's right. Yeah, and maybe for him, maybe it was that was more of like, hey, this is an offering, a sacrifice I want you to offer up on behalf of the church that's growing, you know, who right. knows? But whatever it is, he will come to you the instant, I mean, without delay.
Yeah.
That.
And the importance of having him so close to you, right? So let's go back to the garden of Gethsemane, like the agony of the garden, right? And mm-hmm. and so our Lord has the three apostles, has them stay right here, stop and pray, watch and pray. And Origen makes this very interesting observation that I did not connect, that I thought was very profound, just the need and the desire to know and to be close to God. He said, in this moment, he says, though Jesus went but a little forward, because he told the apostles, stop here and pray, I'm going to go over here and pray by myself, right? That Jesus went just a little bit forward. They could not watch 1 hour in his absence. Let us therefore pray that Jesus may never depart even a little from us. That just that even hour.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, good understanding of knowing that he was probably still in sight of the apostles.
Doesn't it say a stone's right? throw?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But that he left just for that.
The narrative implies it was he was still nearby.
He was still nearby, but he but they couldn't do it. And Saint Jerome talks about how that it's not possible for us to not be tempted in this life.
Right.
Right. So we will be tempted. And so what does it mean, you know, that we may not undergo the test? Right? Because we clearly will be tempted.
Mm-hmm.
But that, my understanding is that that language is actually, the translation there is a little misleading in English. That it's not that we may not be tempted, but that we fall into the temptation itself. So so he says, like, it's impossible to not be tempted, but we pray that we may not enter into the temptation.
That makes sense.
Right?
Because yeah.
we're human, right? We have passions. We have emotions. We have, you know, we have cognitive ability to decipher what's happening around us, and there will be temptations around us.
Yeah, there's, like, several stages throughout temptation. You know, the first one is that an idea is presented to your intellect. And this, you know, then you have to make a judgment. Part of that judgment is that, oh, you recognize the good. The worst temptations are, it's like, well, there's a good here. And that's what you latch on to. And so, like, that's kind of when you start to enter into the temptation, right? Because there are some temptations as you grow that things that used to tempt you, And now when they present themselves to you, you just go, get out of here. You know, like that, you know, it just doesn't have the allure, whatever, you know, that temptation, mm-hmm. it used to dazzle me.
And in the contrary.
And now it doesn't, yeah, right?
And on the contrary, that, you know, whenever you're kind of tempting yourself with sin, where you're like, oh, well, I wouldn't do this, but I may just kind of dabble in this thought process, right. Kind of go down this train of thought. I
like kind of enjoy
this
just
temptation.
Just the temptation. I'm not like, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
But just the temptation is like, oh, that's kind of.
And St. Jerome actually talks about this in the agony for the apostles in the agony of the garden. He talks about how before all of the chaos, they failed Jesus in slumber. So before the big moment for St. Peter, where he says, I'm willing to die for you, Lord, when all the chaos is about to, you know, the moment in which you and I both would say like, oh, Lord, I'll give my life for you because mm-hmm. the swords are drawn. The lines have been drawn in the sand. Like everybody, like the moment is there in theater. Like everything is prepared for me to lay down my life for you, right? I'm ready. But it is like, no. You couldn't even stay awake for 1 hour
right.
before all of that.
Yeah.
You failed him. And you shouldn't expect to be able to say yes to the big thing when you can't say yes to the little thing.
Right. I mean, only hours later, he's going to deny Christ three times.
Three times. Right. And I mean, how many times, again, this is just so analogous to our day-to-day life, right? Like, at least for me, I see the desire that St. Peter has, I have all the time. The falling and just like the bumblingness of St. Peter, I see myself all the time.
Dude, totally.
Where it's like, yes, Lord, I am ready to die for you. Like,
I am your man.
Right. Draw the swords. I am ready to die for you.
Like, I am after your heart.
I am hungry, though.
Right.
You know, like, I want to.
It's like, Jesus, just quiet down for a second because I'm hungry.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I feel so much for the apostles.
Totally.
During this
and I think
moment.
Peter is just such a great example of that, you know, because yes, I'm totally that way where in the morning, like, oh gosh, why did I do that yesterday? It seems so unreasonable. There's zero reason for me to even like go down that path. But then that very day, I see the path again. It's like, well, it's not that bad of a path.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's not anything objectively wrong with the path. I mean, I know, like, I'm just not going to go to the place it leads.
Right.
But the path, there's nothing wrong. It's just a concrete path, you know, whatever it is, just in your mind. And it's like, then that night or the next morning, it's like, Dave, we talked about this.
Right. Remember 24 hours ago?
And the day before that, and the day, you know what I mean? And thank you, St. Peter,
right.
for...
Because I think, you know, the gates, you know, the path to hell is wide.
So wide.
Well, we're out of time on Catholic Radio, but I'm going to talk a little bit more about, the theological reasons to pray during temptation and what to actually do on the podcast. So check us out on the podcast, CatholicManShow.com. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
Raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. Okay, so I'm just going to go through a couple of these. I have a lot of them, but we'll just go through a couple of them. So, like, the theological reasons. So, there's, like, the theoretical or the theological reasons and then, like, the practical, right? So, like,
yeah.
let's set here's the theological reasons why we should do it. And then it's like, yeah, that sounds great, Adam. Levitation in prayer sounds great. Theological reasons for that make sense. Now, how do we do that? So, there's just a couple theological reasons that I want to make sure we understand that praying during temptation is efficacious and we should do it. So it's the union with Christ, right? We've talked about the Garden of Gethsemane throughout this whole episode that the Lord in the moments in which he was at that moment where he was asking that this cup pass from him, but not my will, your will be done.
Mm-hmm.
It creates this union with Christ in that moment. That Christ is the icon of manhood. He is the example in which we should, you know, strive to be. He shows us the times in distress, in temptation, in agony, what to do and how to do it in prayer.
He reveals man to himself and makes his supreme calling clear.
Clear, yes. So through that, there's a union with Christ. There's a kind of a freedom or growth of grace and strength that's provided. The Catechism talks about this, that it teaches that when we ask God to not lead us into temptation but deliver us from evil, the prayer is a way for us to open ourselves to grace and to resist sin, which is why there's so many reasons why the Our Father is just the perfect prayer. Mainly, you know, our Lord told us this is the way in which you pray. That should be enough, right?
Yeah.
But one day I'd like to have an episode where we just break down line by line the Our Father and the beauty of it and why it is the perfect prayer. We should probably do that.
We've done it. We have done it.
Oh, but, we have?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
A couple of years ago.
Okay.
But there's a lot to say about it.
Was that your topic?
Yeah.
That's why I don't remember it. So it also brings the humility and dependence of God, right? It shows that, like, listen, I can't do this on my own, Lord.
Yeah.
It crushes the pride. It crushes the ego.
Yes, which...
Turning us to, yeah, towards...
The element of pride in all sin is this independence from God is kind of what it is, that I don't need God. I'm good by myself. I can make my own decisions. I don't need him to tell me what's right and wrong.
Right.
I will say what's right and wrong.
That's right. That's what modern man does all the time.
I see Jim do it. Gosh, like
so much.
Just like I'm over here watching Jim at inappropriate times of the day. And he's just like, he's just trying to be God over there. And I'm like,
Jim,
we have a lot to talk about afterwards, all right?
I think you're a holy man, Jim, just for what it's worth. Also, the last thing is just out of obedience, because the Lord asks us, like, tells us, like, this is what you should do. So yeah. Out of obedience, like, when we are tempted, we should...
And you know what? That's a good enough reason in and of itself.
Right. That's how I feel. So, okay, so the practical applications, right? Like, how do we, like, what does this really mean? So, here is what I have found. When you enter into prayer during temptation, which is much harder, it's easier to talk about than what it is to do, right? When you're in the throes of a passion, or you know, like we talked about earlier, that passion sometimes blinds us into you know what actually is happening around us. It's very hard to do. But when you enter into prayer during temptation, it kind of breaks this cycle of temptation that you have accustomed yourself to.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Temptation is sort of like a daydream. You know that, like, you'll be having this daydream, and then when you come out of it, you're like, oh.
Well, why would I...
You know, like, you realize, like, oh, wait, there's a world around... But when you're in that moment of temptation, it kind of has this narrow... All you see is the temptation. You're not seeing anything else. Mm-hmm. All of the reality that's in the world.
Right, because sin is stupid, right?
Right.
Sin is actually insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're doing things contrary to
nature.
To nature.
Yeah.
And so when we engage in sinful activities, we're being idiots. Correct. But it is very hard to see that we're being idiots in that time.
Right. So if you can break that cycle and kind of like come back to your senses a little bit, not that the temptation is just going to vanish,
right?
But you can at least engage your rational
your
brain,
intellect. Yeah,
yeah, because temptation has a way of suppressing the rational part of your rational faculties, mm-hmm. And so prayer actually engages those rational parts of your brain.
I found that when I've been tempted with sins of the flesh, that I've tried my best to train myself to envision our mother's face, like as distinctly and descriptively as possible,
mm-hmm.
And just, you know, pray to our mother in violet, come help me, you know, and just think about her. And being able to draw your imagination to something that is holy, again, I've talked about this ad nauseum, I feel like, on the podcast, that I just desire to think of heavenly realities. Like, here on earth, this is what I want. I want to think about heavenly realities. And so when I have found that when I have been tempted with sins of the flesh, that if I, once I realize it, if I stop and just try my best to envision our mother's face, it has been very beneficial for me.
Yeah. That stuff is very, very helpful. Another thing is that so many sins and the temptations to them are centered around a location, that if you get up and move to a new location, often the temptation is no longer reasonable. Like, okay, it's either around your computer or at a, you know, at a certain place or with certain people or
a certain bar.
Right.
Or what, you know,
whatever it is.
Sure.
Okay. And so if you can just physically take yourself out of that location, go to another room, go outside, you know, whatever it is, then the temptation just doesn't work anymore because your computer isn't outside. Now, it's not going to go away because obviously you can go back inside.
Right.
But the first step is flee from temptation. Right. You actually want to flee, run from it because it is so much of temptation. You know, we live in a natural world, and just like grace perfects our nature, it has this, there's a natural element first. Temptation is the same way, but it destroys our nature. So if we can just change the nature, change that natural setting, then it just doesn't work anymore. So not all the, not always, but so often that's the case.
I was talking to a family a while back ago, and I was, anytime that there's a family, a Catholic family that is raising teenage boys, I'm always wanting to ask them questions like, okay, what are you doing? How do you do it?
Yeah.
And one of the things that they said was they made a rule in the house that if at any point that one of their sons says like, I'm going to go on a run, like no questions asked, you just like, it doesn't matter what our plans were, you can go on a run. And basically like the inference there is like, hey, listen, if you are having some sort of sexual temptation, that you go on a run, just get out, kind of like you said about location, like just get out and then also exert energy and exert you know, clear your mind a little bit, because that happens on a run, right? That they made that rule that it doesn't matter what our plans are, that if one of my sons says, hey, I gotta go on a run, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
He's going to go on a run, which I thought was really great. Because it also like, it addresses a situation that is inevitable.
Correct. Right. I also like that because it clearly shows that that is a, they have a family dynamic that has a lot of communication and, you know, is,
and then
is
as a father,
up
it's like,
front about,
you know,
like realities of being a man. And you're growing into a man.
Right.
We've talked about these things. And
you know what I'm going to do as a father? I'm going to go down on my knees and pray.
Right.
You know, it gives me as a dad the opportunity to say like, okay, good. I'm in. Get me into the breach. Mm-hmm. You know, like.
But also, you don't have to come to your dad and say like, Dad, I'm really.
Yeah, I'm just like. It's not awkward. It's not odd. It's not like, it's like, yeah, you're a 16-year-old kid.
Because
go run.
You know, maybe you're just going for a run.
Right.
But maybe you aren't.
Right. And I'm not going to ask questions. It's just like,
yeah.
Just, yeah. That's what you're doing right now. Mm-hmm. So I liked that.
I like that too.
And I'm just trying my best to learn all of these things because obviously I'm quickly approaching teenage years with boys. So.
Yeah, dude.
So anyway, we've talked about some of these other ones, like, you know, the regular habit of prayer builds resistance for temptations because you don't even allow yourself to think about the temptations anymore, right? Because you have this, habitual disposition to pray, to turn yourself back towards heavenly realities. You know, confession, examination of conscience, those are the important things. So here's a couple, like, easy examples of what to do during temptation that some of the saints have said, here's what you do. And these are going to sound not like a big deal.
Self-flagellation.
Yes. Only until you bleed. But this is what the saints have told us.
I had my wife do it to me.
And oh, I think when I'm in temptation, honey, go.
I find it way easier if she does that.
She does
part.
All that part. Yeah. How manly of you. Oh yeah, just Homer Simpson over here. So here's some of the examples of prayer during temptation that some of the holiest saints have told us to do. It's going to sound not like a big deal, anticlimactic, but we should listen to the saints. First one, Jesus, I trust in you.
Boom, dude. Whether you're in temptation or not, like I have found that simple prayer, Jesus, I trust in you, to be the most efficacious thing I can do in my prayer life. Like, no matter what it is, if I'm praying about something, just to remember that, you know, actually, Jesus is gonna, like, Jesus, I know that you will take care of me. And not that I'm like, you know, freeing myself from all responsibility, but when I do that, it has like 100% success rate of just saying, actually, Lord, I'm just going to trust you. And it immediately feels better for me because I'm not worried about whatever it is, because I have come to the point where I know he will. And I totally believe it if I remember to do it. That's the thing. I have to remember to actually trust him. You know, mm-hmm. It's funny that trust isn't just a default all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to actually remember to say, no, actually, I'm gonna just trust in him. And that's true with people too, you know. But this Jesus, I trust in you.
I mean, the fruit of the knowledge from the knowledge of good and evil, from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Mm-hmm. Like, it looked good.
Yeah. It's
like, but Jesus, I trust in you. Like, you told me not to do it.
Because really, I think so much of the time, that's all he wants us to, you know, he allows us to experience trials so that we will remember to trust him.
And strengthen our bond with him.
Gosh, I think so much of the time, this is the whole exercise.
Right.
And if you just trust him, the trials resolve themselves. I mean, well, they don't resolve themselves, he resolves them.
For you, yeah.
They have the appearance of resolving themselves, but you know, almost in a miraculous way sometimes. You know, I'm talking about like huge things, just day-to-day stuff, you know?
Yep.
But that's what he wants. He wants us just to trust him.
A lot easier said than done.
Yeah. Step one is remember to do it.
Yep. And then a couple others. Here's a couple others. Mary, Mother, most pure, pray for me. I find that also the Jesus prayer works really well. Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, have mercy on me, a sinner, over and over and over again. I find that to be very fruitful. That prayer is, after I read The Way of the Pilgrim, I have done my best to use that prayer during specific times, like walking down hallways. Like when I walk down a hallway, I have tried to train myself. Like that's the prayer that I pray. No, just because.
How's it going?
Only
like at remembering to do it. I love stuff like that.
I've been
just
doing
love
it.
The idea of those kinds of things, and then it's so hard for me to actually.
I've been doing it for about 10 years now. So,
have you?
Yeah.
What? You've been holding out on me for 10 years
since I've worked at Custom Sales. Yeah.
A decade. You think you know a guy.
So I'm pretty good at it. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm.
So you've you have established that habit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, bat 1,000, but.
Yeah. But that's all right. But that's just one of those things, you know, I hear stuff like that. It's like, oh, what a great idea. And maybe I'll do it a couple times. But the truth is, I just forget. It's not a lack of desire. It's just the habit has to come. The habit has to come from somewhere.
The spirit is willing.
Yeah, dude. And it's just all stuff like that is so hard for me to remember.
I always like, you know, the things that I try to associate or tag prayer into is like, what is just the thing that I do all the time? When I was, you know, I started that when I was working at Custom Sales, because I walked down a hallway all the time. And so that was just something that I did every day.
Yeah.
Many times a day. And so, and then I carried it into when I worked at the diocese, because I would work from building A to building B, and I was working through that. I walked through that breezeway.
Do you count breezeways? Breezeways count.
That, well, yeah, that's what I did. Yeah. I did count
it's
breezeways.
Like an outdoor hallway.
Yeah. So.
Very good. I like it.
St. Michael prayer. Very efficacious.
I'm pretty sure.
Pope Leo XIII, pray for, or, you know, it's, oh, I almost said saint. Pope Leo XIII, pray for us.
Pretty sure that Satan hates that prayer.
He's not a big fan of that, no.
Like, I don't know for a fact, but I'm pretty sure.
So, anyway, those are the type of prayers that you just have to, like, whatever it is that you do throughout the day, just add that as a thing in those activities that you're doing.
Yeah.
So
prayer cards in certain locations.
And it's not going to feel like that it's going to be a big deal. It's not going to feel like that it's progressing you through the spiritual life. Because it's just like, I don't know, I almost like mind-numbingly do this, thoughtlessly do this every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I get it. But the spiritual life, most of the time, happens very slowly. And most of the time, for the sake of our own humility, the Lord doesn't show you the things in which would actually happen.
Right. But then at one point you look back and say, I don't know when I improved, but you know, you do have moments where you can see.
Well, clearly I'm doing things that I would not have done otherwise.
Right. Like I have progressed. It's very obvious. I don't know when that happened.
Right.
You know?
Typically a Tuesday.
It's usually a Tuesday.
Right. So, Jim, anything else you want to say? Thank
you. Jim says thank you. I'm not sure who he's saying that to.
I think to the listener.
I think he is thanking them.
So, we appreciate you. Hey, join us on Pilgrimage. Support us on Patreon if you want to. And only if you have tithed accordingly to your local community.
First. I agree with that. Okay.
I'm waiting for you to hit the stop button.
Oh, that's my job. Okay.
Yeah.